Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're taking a deep dive into the life and work of Dr. Robert Epstein.
A fascinating guy.
He really is.
Yeah.
We've got one source for this deep dive, a really in-depth interview from the STEM Talk podcast.
But believe me, there's enough material here for like three deep dives.
Seriously. Dr. Epstein has worn so many hats, psychologist, professor, author, journalist, you name it.
And his work, always trying to figure out what makes us tick, you know, human behavior.
Exactly. And he even got his PhD from Harvard without writing a traditional dissertation. Just stapled together all his published research.
Can you imagine?
I can't even imagine having that much published research before getting a PhD. But let's rewind a bit back to his early days.
Okay. Yeah.
So picture this. Graduating high school at 16 during the Sputnik era.
Wow.
Already programming one of the first school computers. That's Dr. Epstein.
That was a crazy time, right? The STEM field suddenly became like the national obsession.
Definitely. And then he ends up at Trinity College during the Vietnam War.
Student strikes, no course requirements. Talk about a wild time to be in college.
You have to wonder how all that shaped his thinking, you know?
Oh, for sure.
And get this, he helped analyze the first ever campus-wide sex survey at Trinity.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. I bet they gave him some unique insights into his classmates.
No doubt. Even back then, he was all about applying research to, like, real-world behavior, you know? That's a thread that runs through his whole career.
Absolutely. It's amazing how early experiences can kind of plant the seeds for an entire career path, you know?
Totally.
Speaking of which, after college, he actually spent some time exploring religion.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, even lived in Israel for a bit before coming back to psychology.
There's a real sense of purpose there, wanting to make a difference, you know?
Totally. Right. It was that drive to understand human behavior, to really use it to help people, that led him to B.F. Skinner, the legend himself.
Wow, B.F. Skinner.
Yeah. And we're not talking about fan mail here. They collaborated on research that ended up getting published in Science Magazine.
Hold on, Science Magazine.
Science Magazine. Talk about a mentor, right?
That's incredible.
And to top it off, Skinner actually helped him get into Harvard's PhD program, like, last minute when a spot opened up.
You can really see how these relationships shaped his journey.
For sure. And at Harvard, his, let's call it, unconventional approach was already on full display.
What do you mean?
So instead of writing a dissertation, he basically compiled all his published papers.
Wait, seriously?
Seriously. And apparently it caused quite a stir among his fellow students.
I can imagine, like showing up to a potluck with a Michelin star dish while everyone else brought chips.
Exactly. But he also found some real support there. He talks about this professor who secretly gave him the oral exam questions beforehand.
Wow, what a gesture.
Right. It speaks volumes about the impact he was already making.
Yeah. But Harvard is also where his truly groundbreaking work began. Remember the pigeons?
Oh, yeah, the pigeons. He teamed up with Skinner to train them, and their findings, well, they ended up challenging the whole field of cognitive psychology.
Challenging how we think about thinking.
Exactly. And it gets even better. They published this satirical paper in Science Magazine making fun of how researchers were, like, humanizing animal behavior.
So they were using humor to make a serious scientific point.
Exactly. But the pigeon work wasn't just about humor. It led to this fascinating theory about creativity.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
So he believes creativity isn't some magical talent. It's a predictable process based on previous experiences. And he tested this with, get this, pigeons, children, and adults.
He's really connecting the dots across species. That's amazing.
And what's even cooler is he took this concept outside the lab. He founded the Cambridge Center for Behavioral Studies to share these ideas with a wider audience. You know?
He wanted to make research accessible, to make a real difference.
Yes. And that desire to reach people led him to journalism. He became the editor-in-chief of Psychology Today.
Psychology Today, the magazine.
Magazine.
Yeah.
And he revamped it, you know, featuring more articles by actual psychologists.
That makes sense, making it more, like, grounded in research.
And he didn't stop there. He also hosted a national radio show interviewing experts and celebrities.
Wow, talk about range. He really had a knack for connecting with people.
He did. And, you know, during this time, he also delved into a topic that really shakes up our ideas about love. Arranged marriages.
Arranged marriages. That's interesting.
It is. His research found that couples in arranged marriages often develop stronger love than those who married for, like, love at first sight.
Really? That goes against everything we're taught about romantic relationships.
It does. It makes you question everything you thought you knew about love. He even developed this concept called a love contract and explored the idea of teaching people how to, like, deliberately fall in love.
Hold on. Deliberately fall in love? Is that even possible?
That's what I thought. Love seems so, you know, unpredictable.
Right. Like, you can't just force it.
Exactly. But his research on arranged marriages suggests that maybe, just maybe, there's a more systematic aspect to love.
It's like it can be cultivated in a way.
Yeah, that's what the love contract is about, creating a framework for connection and intimacy. But he didn't stop there. Next, he tackled adolescence, the whole concept of it.
Adolescence? What do you mean?
He argues that modern society artificially extends childhood, and it's actually having negative consequences. He even created these online tests to measure adultness.
Adultness? That's a tricky one. What does it even mean to be an adult?
Right. Is it age? Financial independence? Something else entirely. It's a question we all grapple with, both personally and as a society.
Totally. And his work raises some important points about the expectations we put on young people.
And maybe how we're holding them back, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
And that questioning of societal norms extends to his research on sexual orientation.
Okay, interesting.
He found support for the idea that bisexuality is actually the human norm.
Wow, that's definitely going to spark some debate.
Oh, for sure. He's even writing a book about it called The Mix.
I'm sure it'll be controversial, but that's kind of his thing, isn't it?
It is. He's not afraid to tackle the tough questions. And speaking of challenging conventions, this brings us to another fascinating part of his career, artificial intelligence.
AI. Now, this is where things get really interesting.
Right. It's like all these different threads, pigeons, love, AI, they're all woven together in his work.
It's like he's creating a giant tapestry of human behavior.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And his early involvement in AI is pretty remarkable. He co-edited this book called Parsing the Turing Test, which delves into the whole philosophy and methodology of AI.
This was back when AI was still in its infancy, right?
Yeah, way back. He was even involved in the first Loebner Prize competition, you know, real-life Turing test.
Imagine being there at the forefront of AI research, seeing those early attempts to create thinking machines.
It really makes you appreciate how far we've come, but also how much further we have to go.
Totally. Dr. Epstein has always been a forward thinker, pushing boundaries and exploring the potential of technology.
Definitely. And that drive to explore new frontiers leads us to the next chapter of his career. And this is where things get really, really interesting.
Oh, I can't wait. It's amazing, right? From pigeons to AI, it all connects.
It really does. It's like he's piecing together this massive puzzle of human behavior.
And that puzzle gets even more complex with his work at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology.
AIBRT.
Yeah, AIBRT. He co-founded it with a former student.
Keeping it in the family.
Right. And they're doing some groundbreaking work there, like the largest ever study on sexual orientation.
Wow, that's huge.
It is. But what really caught my eye, and I think this is where it gets crucial for all of us, is his research on online manipulation.
Yeah, that's some scary stuff.
Seriously scary. So he discovered this thing called the search engine manipulation effect.
SEMI.
Right, SEMI. And get this, he stumbled upon it while researching how search rankings affect what people buy.
So like online shopping?
Exactly, like which brand of coffee ends up in your Amazon cart. But then he realized, hold on, this power of top search results, it goes way beyond just shopping.
It's influencing our thinking on a much deeper level.
Exactly. And his research proved it. He published this paper in PNAS showing how manipulating search results can sway opinions.
Even voting behavior.
Especially voting behavior. And that paper, it became one of the most downloaded on their site.
So people are paying attention.
They are, which is good, because yeah, we tend to think of search engines as, like, neutral tools, right?
Just giving us the information we're looking for.
But Dr. Epstein's work shows that they can be used to, like, subtly shape our perceptions without us even knowing it.
We're being manipulated, and we don't even realize it.
It's kind of creepy when you think about it.
It is. He even calls these online tools mind control machines.
Which might sound a bit dramatic.
A little bit, yeah.
But his research backs it up.
Think about it. Every time you search for something online, you're basically at the mercy of an algorithm.
An algorithm that decides what you see first.
And those algorithms, they're not always neutral. They can be tweaked, manipulated, to push certain agendas.
Exactly. And we don't even know how they work half the time.
It's a black box.
Totally. And that lack of transparency, it's a huge problem.
Absolutely. But Dr. Epstein isn't just complaining about it. He's taking action.
How so?
He's developing monitoring systems to track search engine results, especially during elections.
To see if there's any bias towards certain candidates.
Exactly. It's like he's fighting fire with fire, you know?
Using technology to expose how technology can be used against us.
Yes. And it's become even more important since, 2016.
When online manipulation became a major issue.
A major issue, and probably even more sophisticated now.
It's scary to think how vulnerable we are to this kind of, like, unseen influence.
It is. And Dr. Epstein is out there sounding the alarm about this surveillance business model that companies like Google and Facebook use.
They're collecting tons of data on us.
And then using that data to manipulate us, all for profit.
It's become the norm, unfortunately.
Every click, every search, it's all feeding this giant data machine.
That's learning how to predict and influence our behavior.
It's a bit unsettling, to say the least. And Dr. Epstein argues that current regulations just aren't enough.
He thinks we need way more robust monitoring systems.
To hold these companies accountable.
To make them think twice before they, try to manipulate us.
Right. And he's even said that those huge fines the EU slapped on Google.
Yeah, those were massive.
Didn't really change anything.
They're just a cost of doing business for these giants.
It's David versus Goliath, isn't it?
It really is. And some politicians, like Elizabeth Warren, they've called for breaking up these tech companies.
But Dr. Epstein isn't convinced that's the right solution.
He thinks it's more nuanced than that.
We need to address the root of the problem, the surveillance business model itself.
But how do you even begin to tackle that?
It's a tough one. Even Mark Zuckerberg, he's called for government regulation of the internet.
But in a way that wouldn't actually address the core issues.
Right. It's like they want to control the narrative around regulation.
To make sure it doesn't hurt their bottom line.
So, where does that leave us? It all feels very overwhelming.
It is a lot to take in. But, awareness is the first step.
Knowledge is power. Right.
Exactly. And Dr. Epstein's work is about empowering us with that knowledge so we can make informed choices.
He's not just focusing on the big picture, though.
He's also a big believer in individual action.
Yeah, like taking control of our own digital lives.
Right. He wrote this great article outlining 7 simple steps people can take to protect their privacy online.
7 steps we can all take.
Things like using privacy-focused browsers and search engines like DuckDuckGo instead of Google.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah, it's becoming more popular. And he also suggests being careful about what you share on social media.
Not giving away all our data.
Exactly. And using strong passwords, 2-factor authentication, all that good stuff.
It's easy to ignore all that.
Yeah.
But hearing it from someone like Dr. Epstein, it makes it real,
He walks the walk, too. He says he hasn't seen a targeted ad in years because of these steps he takes.
Wow. That's impressive.
It shows that we're not totally powerless,
We can fight back.
We can. It's about taking control of your digital footprint and reducing the amount of data you feed into the system.
Data they can use to manipulate us.
Exactly. And it's not just about protecting ourselves. It's about teaching the next generation.
Our kids.
Our kids. How to navigate the digital world safely and responsibly.
It's like digital literacy is the new essential skill.
It really is. We need to teach them critical thinking, how to question what they see online.
To avoid being manipulated.
Exactly. They're growing up in a world where the lines between reality and the digital world are blurred.
It's a whole new world, and we need to prepare them for it.
We do. It's a big responsibility, but it's one we can't ignore.
It really makes you think, What are we teaching our kids about online safety?
It's a whole new set of parenting skills, that's for sure.
It is. But what I find really interesting about Dr. Epstein is, even with all this groundbreaking research, he still makes time for, a real life.
Oh, yeah.
He loves reading novels.
He does.
He's a big classical music fan.
And a dad.
And most importantly, he's a dedicated father to 5 kids. He even finds time for, adventures. He went dog sledding in Alaska.
Wow, that's awesome.
Right. He seems like he truly embodies that idea of lifelong learning.
Always curious, always exploring.
Yeah. His career path has been so winding and diverse, but there's this constant thread of intellectual curiosity.
And this desire to share what he learns with the world.
Exactly. And it's not just about publishing in academic journals for him. It's about reaching a wider audience.
Making these complex ideas accessible to everyone.
Yes. And that's what I find so inspiring about his work.
He's bridging that gap between science and, public understanding.
He really is. And, it's been an incredible journey exploring his life and work.
It has. From those early experiments with pigeons.
To his groundbreaking work on online manipulation.
It all comes back to this fundamental question. How do we understand human behavior?
And how do we use that understanding to make the world a better place.
Exactly. And as we wrap up this deep dive, it leaves us with a question for you, dear listener.
A question to ponder.
If Dr. Epstein is right, and search engines have this incredible power to influence us,
to shape our thinking,
how can we be sure we're making truly informed decisions?
Especially in a world where algorithms control so much of what we see.
It's a challenge, no doubt.
It is. But it starts with awareness.
With being more critical of the information we consume.
And seeking out diverse perspectives.
Exactly. And thankfully, Dr. Epstein's work gives us the knowledge and the tools to start doing that.
He's given us a roadmap.
And don't forget, you can find links to all his work, including that article on online privacy, The 7 Simple Steps.
And those online tests he developed.
All in the show notes for this episode.
So go check those out. Keep the conversation going.
Keep exploring these ideas.
Because ultimately, we all have a role to play in shaping the future of technology.
And ensuring it serves humanity, not the other way around.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the fascinating world of Dr. Robert Epstein.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time, stay curious.